Welcome to Couve.com. I'm your host, David Medore, and we have a guest with us today, Vitaly Stepanyuk. And the headlines today is that we're talking about the Russian community, the Slavic community, why the Slavic community has settled here, and why there's great fear in participating in the political process.
Absolutely.
Is that the case?
I think so. Political process or even just active in the community, whatever you do. I know, you know, walking around picking up garbage, even that, they find that whatever they do is really pointless.
So we have, what, about 100,000?
Yes. Looking at statistics rather recently, especially from the social services, they say on average there's about 100,000 Slavic-speaking individuals here in the Portland metro.
That is a huge number of people that
Absolutely.
Have settled in this area. And when you say Slavic-speaking, yeah. which basically it's Russian and a dialect of Russian,
Absolutely.
Right?
They, when we say Slavic, we could say Russian. The majority are Russian,
mm-hmm.
we could safely assume. Now, there is a significant majority of Ukrainian, so we use the word Slavic because, you know, a couple hundred years ago, it was all one language. But it's similar.
Okay.
Whether it's Ukrainian, whether it's Russian, we understand each other.
Okay. So the reason that most of these people have come here, what is the primary reason? Why leave the Soviet Union? Why settle in America? And why settle in this area here?
Well, it's because of the Constitution and the First Amendment.
Of the United States.
Absolutely. Religious freedom. That was the central goal of why. And matter of fact, this is even the, you know, the state of Oregon, the city of Portland officially states, well, 85% of the Russian community is staunchly Christian. They belong to a religious group that's very conservative or very strict.
It sounds like we're talking about the pioneers again, the pilgrims. The main reason why most of these people have come is for religious freedom.
Absolutely, to be exhilarated from the pressure that they had, the Soviet or communist pressure in the Soviet Union. And even though, yes, after Gorbachev we had glasnost or openness,
mm-hmm.
even after that, there was severe hostility towards Christian groups. And to this day there still are. So even when the laws were relaxed in the Soviet Union, they wanted out. I mean, they were tired of it. 100 years was enough, you know, thousands, millions of murders. It was just too much.
So if you had any kind of religion in the Soviet Union, especially if you were a Christian,
yes,
what would be the fear? How likely is it that you would be made a target and your life would be taken?
Very likely. For example, we never had churches in the Soviet Union until about the 1980s. And the fact is that when everybody who was religious, when they came together, whether it was Saturday or whether it was a Sunday, they only met in houses. On top of that, to get to this house, now imagine a block, maybe two blocks, and the church, which was technically a house, was two blocks away.
Okay.
If I lived two blocks away from this church, I would walk to this church for about an hour, and I would take every single road I saw because I would fear for my life that somebody like the KGB would spot me, knew that I was a Christian, would follow me, would come into the church and kill everybody. And that's essentially what happened. If the Christians were found, they were killed. They were punished severely. They were sent to camps. So just to get to church, to walk to church that was 2 minutes away, you had to walk 1 hour. That's how severe it was.
Lose a tail.
Absolutely.
So you weren't followed. You would go every which way in order to see who's following you and get there safely.
Absolutely.
How would you know where to meet?
I mean, well, you know, every other week they often change. You never met at the same place for, you know, more than 1 week unless you had to. But still, they would, you know, word would spread around, or I guess at the starting of right when the service was over, they would say, you know, next week I'll meet there. Here or there, but it was very secretive, and they only met in small groups, you know, not more than 10, 15 people. This wasn't official. And even when the time came that they actually allowed churches, the churches were controlled completely by the communists. And the only religion really that was allowed was the Baptist Church. And essentially, the pastor of the church would have to report every single new member. They would say, today this person came, today this person came. I mean, every little detail, every little movement was controlled by the communist regimes, by the Soviet Union.
If it was an official pastor of the official church.
But that came around way later.
So up through around 1980, this was a very dangerous, it was a very dangerous thing for you to be.
Absolutely. I mean, for example,
a Christian.
You know, sadly, yes, as a Christian, sadly, you know, for me, I was born here. I did not experience that, but many of, for example, I speak on the Russian radio, and many of my most of the listeners have had direct or indirect experiences. My father often tells me, you know, stories, tells me what had happened in his case. And when he was younger in Russia, now they met in houses. This was his direct experiences. You never, ever were baptized during the day at all. I mean, that was unheard of. You baptized at night. The ceremonies were very short, so no one would see you, not a single person. And the slightest sound, I mean, anything, they got in their cars and they left. I mean, they sped away. That's everybody, whoever, wherever you could go. Because if they were that afraid, because if the KGB came in, and I had, you know, and I know, and in his case, so first of all, it was a night, it was often, you know, in December when it was very cold, you know, the last place you would go is a lake, but that's where you had to get baptized, in ice cold water in the night. That's just, and it was that severe. I've had, wow. You know, many people tell me that, you know, if the KGB came into your house, you were shaking, you would not say a word, you were quivering, fearing for your life.
And they wouldn't necessarily take you away. They could kill you on the spot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very often they would take him. Many of the mothers were worried. Well, you know, he never returned. And there's so many stories of that. Often, yes, if it got very severe, there was times where they just wiped out. I mean, they just killed people, killed civilians, just went through. Very often, you know, this person would disappear. You just never heard of him again. How many situations of that where the father was gone? He's not gone. If he did not come home that day, you'll never see him again. That was the general
life.
Yes.
Now you have a regular radio program locally here. Mm-hmm. You're at Russian Radio 7,
yes.
1010 AM.
Yes.
And that covers the Portland metro area.
Absolutely.
And you have call-in shows, and you are very much engaged with the Russian community on a regular basis,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
So you have, and most of the callers, of the people involved, are 30 years old and above, right?
I've never had anybody under 30, and you could tell by their voice right away. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, young people don't care. I mean, it's sad, but they don't care. Most of them are those who've had direct or indirect experiences of the Soviet Union, of communism, and mm-hmm. still know, and just know the significance of what it takes, you know, to be politically active.
So the younger generation hasn't experienced that lifestyle. They have the fear.
Absolutely.
I mean, so apathy can happen.
Yes,
I have. Let's talk about the generation that has mm-hmm. experienced it. So many of these have come from the Soviet Union and experienced that fear, that not just fear, it's really a real threat mm-hmm. here. So it's not just in the religious community or religious that persecution, but also any kind of political involvement, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you were not allowed to be involved politically. It was completely rigged and controlled. After all, you know, the Communist Party won 90% of the vote. Most people didn't even come. But it was for religious reasons. And most, I have not met a single person who came here. Well, most who came here before the year 2000. Some I've met after the year 2000, they came here, I know, for medical reasons. One person in particular, a close friend of mine, said, well, you know, in 2005, if I wouldn't have come here, my son would have died. But before the year 2000, before the year 2002, when the gates opened, we had, you know, this insurgency of immigration from Russia. Mm-hmm. And the central goal was to just evade or elude from the communists, from the religious persecution from the Soviet Union. And most of the Slavic community you will meet nowadays are highly religious people, are those people who came here to have this religious freedom.
Like the pilgrims.
Absolutely. And it's truly a miracle. But, you know, they started coming in 1991 when the gates were open.
Why would the KGB, why would the Soviet government fear in the religious community? Why in the world would they say, well, why don't they just let them live?
Absolutely.
What's wrong with that? What a threat would Christianity be to the Soviet Union, to the KGB, to that former government,
communism? Absolutely, and especially when you take the fact that, you know, in Christianity we preach nonviolence. Mm-hmm. One of the Ten Commandments is thou shalt not kill. And they knew that they were very peaceful people. You just never heard of situations where a Christian killed. I mean, even if the KGB uh-huh. killed most of your family members, you would not kill the KGB member. I mean, that's
so the Christians weren't militant.
Not at all. They feared for their lives.
Okay. So why would they be targets for death?
It's interesting, and I believe it has to do with the ideology. I'd love to bring this example. It's of North Korea. Now Kim Jong-il died recently. Most citizens of North Korea believe Kim Jong-il has the power to control the weather. He has godlike powers. He is essentially their god. And it comes with the doctrine of communism, where Karl Marx taught that in order to have a perfect society, you have to do away with religion. And essentially, the government is the religion. To control the masses, so there is complete equality, to control the masses, you have to have no religion. Because if people believe in different religions or believe in a religion, they don't really believe in the cause of the people. And that was the driving goal. You had to believe in the government. You could not have a religion, because if you believed in the religion, then, you know, they knew. And essentially, I think the communist regimes, they try to make people believe as if they were gods, so they could completely control the population. If I believe in my Christian God, and someone try to come up and say, hey, I'm God, I would not believe him. But yeah. In this case, they absolutely would. And they would follow. And that's why you have massive control. You know, North Korea, you have posters of Kim Jong-il in almost every single house. They're everywhere. You walk down the streets, you see posters of him. And mm-hmm. they believe he has godlike powers. And this just allows, you know, the North Korean government to control every single detail of every single person's life.
It reminds me of Rome, no God but Caesar. So basically, if the communist regime would, their goal was to control people. Mm-hmm. And if someone was to look at the, get a hold of the Bible mm-hmm. and say, hey, government's not God. God is God, and authority comes from him, mm-hmm. not from the state. And so you got this authority challenge. You've got freedom, independence, and I look at the U.S. Constitution here, and you look at the Declaration of Independence, and it's the communist regime turned on its head. There, it's a state, top-down government, we mm-hmm. control you. And here, it's we the people. The government is actually our servant. So have many in the Russian-speaking community got that? Do they understand that?
I believe so. I mean, obviously, because we could meet anytime, you know, at any time during the week, mm-hmm. we could always go to church. And we, you know, often I hear in sermons, and it's repeated over and over again, God blessed us, we have this freedom mm-hmm. where we don't, and often, very often in sermons from older generations, they will recite the words, we are not persecuted anymore. You know, we are blessed with this time where we have no persecution, and we should use this time very wisely and thank God. One thing I wanted to mention, you said Bible. It's a fun fact, I guess. mm-hmm. But most Bibles were handwritten in the Soviet Union.
Hand copied?
Absolutely. You sat down, and if you had a Bible, it was not print. Very rarely did we receive printed Bibles.
What would happen if you were caught with a Bible?
They were burned. Right away, they were taken and burned.
Your life?
Well, your life was burned too, I believe so. And that's most often what happened. And it's just, you know, handwritten Bibles. That's how severe it was. And people would literally sit all day just to write out, you know, page by page by page. The Bible could have been easily taken away if you were caught with a Bible. Now, again, going back to North Korea in 2009, a woman was killed because she spread Bibles around. She gave out Bibles, and this was public persecution. So, and that's essentially what happened under the Soviet Union. If they found out you were Christian, you were locked away, you were never seen again. Either you were sent into Siberia, such as in the case of my grandfather. He was sent to Siberia. That's also where my mother was born. She was born in a camp, strictly because he was Christian, and he was more of the lucky ones. He wasn't murdered.
So the normal community here, Russian-speaking community, they enjoy religious freedom here. They're open and honest, and or they don't feel like they need to hide that at all.
And they don't.
What about their political views? What about their participation in the political process?
Here it gets disappointing. Now, in the Soviet Union, the party was rigged, and there's no doubt about that.
Elections were just simply a corrupt.
It was elections
exercise.
Where it was a joke, you know. To make it look like there was some sort of democracy, but it was a pure joke. I mean, you had no choice of choosing who the leader
and
would be.
Everybody basically knew that.
Absolutely, every single person. There was no doubt about that. They did, and that's why they didn't care. And touching up on their mindset when they moved to America, they too have a very similar mindset. They say all government is the same.
So that's still carried over here. They feel like the elections here are rigged. What's the point? What's in participating? Because there it was a joke, and here there must be some manipulation going on there. It doesn't really make a difference.
Yes, and many say absolute manipulation. I say even at the local level. Some say even at the local level. They say, well, the president's a puppet. You know, if the puppet masters, often they say the Freemasons, if they like to control. I mean, if they dislike the president, then they will put a new president in. Everything is controlled. They can't do anything without those who have all the money and all the power. So it's not the president controlling, it's not the president who's chief executive, someone else. It's very powerful people controlling the president. Many, if not most, think that everything is controlled. And it's a very difficult mindset. But they say, if these people are so evil, and they say, well, they're atheists and they hate Christians, but then why do we have such a, strong Christian backbone? Why do we see such strong Christian candidates? Why are we allowed to enjoy these freedoms to basically do whatever we want?
Mm-hmm. So that's the baggage that they've inherited. That's the way they've experienced life. So there's many things yet to be unlearned. Because their votes do count here. They
Absolutely.
Can speak up. So the process of them participating is still a challenge. Are they coming around? I mean, you have this regular conversation with them on the radio, right?
I do see a movement. It's funny, but one of the things I've noticed is many people think I will be killed for what I say. I obviously have my own political viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I say, well, it's been 4 years, Obama, you need to retire. And they literally fear that I will be murdered for what I just said. Now, it's not that, there's no profanity or involved. No, it's just purely such a statement as your time is up.
So if you challenge, in the Soviet Union, if you said something evil or something derogatory, uncomplimentary about the authorities there, your life would be in danger.
You were never seen of or heard of again.
And here, that carryover, that expectation is still there.
Absolutely.
And yet you've been very politically involved. And,
yes.
And you can say things positive and negative about the president or Congress or whatever. And they feel like, man, you're either very foolish or you're very courageous.
Essentially, that's what it is. Some encourage me. Others are like, well, you really need to watch it. Why just, one person in particular says, why don't you just go bake? See, I like baking. They're like, well, just make a career out of baking. I said,
baking? You mean
baking? I said, cakes. I mean, I love doing cheesecake. I love cheesecakes and I love baking cheesecakes. Many people like my cheesecakes. But I have a vision. We have power and our votes count. And this is, especially 2016, one of the most important elections ever. And one of the last elections, I believe, where we, especially the Russian community as Christians, can make a difference.
You mean 2012?
2012. My apologies. I watched the movie 2016 and I get those two dates mixed up.
So, I want to ask you about that. But right now, we are in the middle of an election.
Yes.
How many of the Russian community, what the percentage are registered to vote and actually expected to vote in this election so far?
That would be difficult to say. I would say half, because I've met quite a lot of people that are registered. Personally, I know people, and I ask them, are you registered? They say yes. I say, really? Have you ever voted? No. I say, But your vote means so much, especially at the local level. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Don't mention the, you know, don't mention the presidential candidates. Don't mention their race if mm-hmm. you think it's insignificant. Mm-hmm. But really, 5,000-10,000 people voting in the local elections, mm-hmm. and you say your vote does not count and it's rigged. Mm-hmm. And I do get upset because they say, well, you know, even those that are registered, but I would safely assume that about half, maybe less than half, but still a significant amount of our Slavic people, of our, you know, Slavic citizens in Portland and Oregon are registered to vote.
So one of your missions is to try to help them understand their participation is needed. It is important. It does make a difference, and you're helping to get them registered.
And it's working. August primaries, August 7th, I personally had about 15 people call me saying, what can you tell me about this candidate? What can you tell me about this candidate? And literally 30 minutes before it was 7 o'clock, someone's, you know, he's driving the car. He's like, I'm driving right now, but I'm still filling this out because I know this is important. Mm-hmm. And you can tell most of these people never voted before, though they were registered. Obviously, mm-hmm. you know, if they received the papers. Mm-hmm. So about 12 to 14 people called me hours before the elections, before 7 o'clock. And I saw this movement. This is something that's never happened before. And I maybe it's because there was not this outreach to the Slavic community or this minority outreach, mm-hmm. if you could, you know. But still, I know that what I say and I know that what I do really counts. And they're starting to understand that, you know, we might not have this religious freedom, especially because that's what's most important for them. We might not have this religious freedom for a very long time. And I know a lot of them, they see that, but they say we can't do anything. And then, but I have seen this movement where they are becoming active, and that is just amazing. It's incredible, and it's something that's never happened before.
And that is encouraging. Now, this whole community has lived under socialism. Mm-hmm. in the Soviet Union all this time.
Yes.
And so you have firsthand experience with socialism, and the experience here, you see the United States in many ways moving towards socialism. How do you, is that
Many of them actually say that. Many in the Russian community say what we see right now in the American political system, we see this social shift or the shift towards socialism. Mm-hmm. And because they say we understand how the system worked in the Soviet Union. And I do have callers calling in saying, I absolutely agree with you, Vitaly. We are seeing a drive towards socialism or this, you know, social, you know, furtive social revolution going on mm-hmm. in America. And, you know, they, because many of them observe, after all, they don't vote themselves, but they do check up on events that go on. After all, they still fear that something might happen. So they know perfectly well. I have very many listeners calling in who understand the political process just incredibly. I mean, it's impeccable. And you could have decent discussions with these people, but they don't vote.
So the socialism experience, has that caused them to feel, maybe socialism is okay here? Or they feel like, absolutely, we don't want to have anything to do with socialism. What are they lying at? Does that make any difference?
They don't want to deal with socialism. They don't, but they fear that they can't really do anything about it. I mean, some, if you consider the fact that many of them actually like, to a certain extent, they feel that this socialism is, they have a mindset that this socialism is different from the socialism that occurred in the Soviet Union.
Is it?
If you look at Greece and Italy, I think there's, you know, that says otherwise, but still, the problem is that now this is a fact. More than 80% of minorities or immigrants in America use some sort of federal or government benefit. And essentially, you're battling between, and I understand many of them have big families, but essentially you're battling between, well, should I accept, you know, these benefits for free, or should I reject these benefits because they're socialistic? But many of them say, well, you know, with these nice times, I guess this socialism is more neutral towards us, and there's no bad to it, there's no evil to it.
And how do you feel about it?
I think if the clearest example is Greece. Sadly, many maybe don't even know the situation in Greece, but obviously Greece is bankrupt. On top of being forgiven billions, hundreds of billions of dollars, they still have a lot of anger because people were living not within their means. And it was, you know, very socialistic policies where you had every benefit you wanted. And this is, you know, I guess a socialistic utopia where you essentially have everything you want. But the government had to go into debt to pay for these benefits, to give these benefits to the citizens of Greece. They had to borrow money, massive amounts of money, which they knew they would never pay back, which essentially is impossible to pay back. They will never make enough money to pay back. And then it all went down. It all went south. Mm-hmm. Greece went bankrupt.
Sure. So every experiment in socialism is only a temporary experiment, because you can draw from all the resources that were non-socialism up to that point,
yes,
and then consume all those, and eventually they run out of other people's money, and then you end up with a collapse.
Essentially, that's the biggest problem. And the saddest part is, though, I mean, you know, we know exactly which party targets the immigrants in particular and tries to give them these benefits. Now, it's not that we're against benefits, but it really impacts them in particular and causes them to be neutral towards voting because, you sure. know, life is just too well.
Yeah, if you can get on the dole, you're on the receiving end of socialism, then you feel like socialism's good. But you're also contributing to the downfall of the nation. You're basically accelerating a point where there's going to be a day of reckoning. The money's going to run out.
Yes.
And there will be a collapse, or they'll have to somehow have this very painful experience to get back on track and try to repay that.
It's called austerity, and people hate it. And what's interesting now, what this comes down, and I mean, every single person could relate to this with day-to-day experiences. Mm-hmm. If everything is good, we don't want to change that. Why, if I'm living the good life, whether, and you know, very often it could be through, whether it's food stamps or various, you know, dependencies on the government, why would I want to limit, you know, my well-being? You could put it that way. Why would I make myself
free.
Worse off?
Why,
yes, I mean,
why stop the free stuff?
And many people actually tell me it's stressful, but many people have told me, well, while it's free, why not use it? I say, well, you don't understand. It's free because for those people that really need it. It's not free just for every single person to, you know, to make themselves better off. Because I know many people who live really well, who have very nice cars and houses. Yes, in the Russian community too. But they say, well, while we have it, when it's free, why not use it? Just why not? I mean, why not? What are the impacts? They don't understand the impacts. The clearest example of this is many in the Russian community see this deterring to the Christian faith, or there's just a fall in believers in the Russian community, which is very noticeable.
What do you mean?
As in, many of the children, many of the offspring don't really care about going to church, don't really care about God, and are very neutral. They're very lukewarm in their faith to the point where they just don't care. And now, the thing is, they have never fought for their Christian beliefs. Now, imagine this situation where someone would come banging on your door and said, if you're a Christian, we will kill you. Or where you had to literally fear for your life for your Christian beliefs. The people that chose to be Christians were very Christian. They understood that what they believed in, they could die for any minute, any second, anywhere. Walking down the street, wherever you were, in your house, they would come in and kill you. So you understood that, yes, I decided to be a Christian, but I understand that with this decision, I could be murdered any day. I could lose my family.
So you were making a commitment at that point. You understand
yes.
that with the price that was being paid, that could be paid, it might be your life.
Absolutely.
So when you remove that and say, yeah, you have freedom of religion here, in fact, you get free money, and then you can, why be a Christian? Why value your religious freedom?
Absolutely, and now you have options. It's like, I can go to church today, or I could choose to go next week. You don't care. You say, we're always going to live another day. You know, life is just too good.
Lapse into apathy.
Absolutely, and if they knew, you know, I could only imagine how much of the churches would lose membership if, you know, the government today declared, everybody who goes to church tomorrow will be killed. You know, you would really see those who really want to go to church, those true believers, and those who would just say, nah, life is good. We'll think of God another day. That's essentially, it's this lukewarm situation where you know that everything is so good and that nothing bad will happen to you. Mm-hmm. Even though we have this looming deficit, you know, $16 trillion, that's record. After all, we have more debt than the European Union combined. But many people say that somebody will fix it for them, or it's just unrealistic. People by nature are optimistic. That's understandable. But still, and even me, I really doubt something will happen. I really doubt there's going to be a default, but there will be a default. But still, I don't want to believe it. And it's a very big difficulty. And, you know, tying this with the Russian community and with being active, they just think, you know, because during good times, we just see, you know, during bad times, during turmoils, we see, for example, voter registration goes up significantly. When people are losing jobs, they understand that something is wrong. Maybe some politicians really screwed up, mm-hmm. and it's time to change the political system. But during good times, they just don't care. They're very neutral. During the 70s, you know, we've seen just this, you know, the Reagan insurgency, but still this massive voter turnout, whatnot. And it was just very impressive. Times were terrible. I mean, you had to wait to pump your gas. You know, it was 20 cars at a time just waiting, and there was a massive shortage. Mm-hmm. People were active. When there's these times of, you know, goodness, you could say, these socialistic times where, you know, really you get whatever you want. You don't have to struggle for something. You become careless. You become lukewarm.
Sure. When you know the price is valuable, you cherish it. I'm curious. I think it may be on Saturdays, maybe it's on Sundays as well, mm-hmm. that I see the Slavic community walking to church.
Yes.
Why is that?
You know,
they don't drive. They walk.
That's very interesting. Yes, absolutely. As you know, I would say maybe not half. Now, we have four main religions, separate, you know, religious beliefs or religions in the Russian community. They're broken down into Seventh-day Pentecostals. We have Pentecostals, meaning they go to church on Sunday. We have Baptists, and we have Adventists. A significant majority maybe a good 30% would be Seventh-day Pentecostals. The other 30 would be Pentecostals, and the other 30 would be Baptists. Adventists, not so many in the Russian community. Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting beliefs they have for those Seventh-day Pentecostals is we're not allowed to work on Sabbath. They fully observe the Sabbath. They're Christians who, you know, fully accept the Old and New Testaments. Mm-hmm. But they believe that thou shalt not work, you know, if you cannot work from sunset to sunset. So many of them say that driving a car is considered work. So they decide
really?
To walk.
Yes. I mean, I see them walk. They walk for a mile or more.
Absolutely.
Like, that sounds like work for most people here. It's compared to sitting in a car and pushing the accelerator.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, even, you know, me, obviously, you know, I think that, well, it's not necessarily work, especially if you're going to church. Mm-hmm. After all, you're doing, you know, if you live 20 miles away, you have no other option. Mm-hmm. But another thing is we see, and still the Russian community is growing and the religious community is growing. And if you noticed, you might have noticed this in particular on Mill Plain and 164th. They have actually built a church there. And
I see it right here on 18th Street. They built a House of God on
18th Street. Yes, House of God. Mm-hmm. This is House of God. It was originally, there was the one in Port. Now there's two Houses of God. I mean, this is the same, you know, the same church, but they separated because there was just too much people. So they had to build a new church. And a lot of the people that lived here that went to the House of God, mm-hmm. or the Home of God, lived in Vancouver.
Oh, yeah, Home of God, I think.
Absolutely. In Russian, it's Dom Bozhi. And so they built the second church for the, you know, the Russian community here, those who believe that they can't walk on Saturday. And they built the church right there. And matter of fact, once the church was built, a lot of people moved right by the church. That's another thing we see, because after all, the Russian community is very highly religious. Mm-hmm. So if you build a church there, you will also see
move next to it.
Absolutely. And uh-huh. right by the church, you know, 2-3 seats away. So we also saw, once that church was built, we also saw a lot of immigration, you could say, from from Oregon and other places in Vancouver right next to the church. And that's one of the things you see, you know, in the Russian community, you have often where there's a church, you will find about 100 or more, you know, Russians living very close by, two, 3 blocks away.
Okay, interesting. So if you were to give any kind of an encouragement to the Slavic community, what would it be?
Be active. Your votes count. I mean, honestly, okay. And that's what's most important. Many of them don't understand that they're slowly starting to understand, and luckily for those, but everything we do really counts, especially when it comes down to the local level. And, you know, this all began with referendum 74, and it counts. It really does. If it didn't count, mm-hmm. then we would have, you know, these
yes.
issues. We wouldn't even have these issues. It would just, everything would be controlled. I mean, we wouldn't, you know, I don't think okay. Christianity would be even allowed.
So if people want to find out more, you have a website.
I do. I started recently now. I'm not much of a, you know, graphic designer, web designer, mm-hmm. but it's SlavicNW.com, no, Slavic Northwest, because most of the Russians in America do live in the Northwest, whether it's Oregon, mm-hmm. California, or Washington. So Slavic Northwest, SlavicNW.com. Mm-hmm.
So SlavicNW.com.
Absolutely.
And you also have a radio station here. It's on AM 1010.
Mm-hmm. KOOR 1010 AM.
KOOR?
Yes.
1010 AM. So if people want to be able to tune into that. Also, so your program is on when?
Well, it's Monday through Thursday from 12 to 1. I talk about the news. I talk about politics. Politics. That's what it is.
Okay. So you have a call-in show.
Yes, absolutely. I often what happens is I say this news, hey, look what happened here and there. You know, I say my commentary, obviously, I think this and that. I often give a historic, because I myself really love history, I often like to explain in depth an incident. Well, this happened because of this and that. There are similar incidences, you know, even about what happened recently in California, no, I'm sorry, in New York with the churches not being allowed to, you know, gather in schools, well, obviously after the judge said no, actually you can. But, you know, and I really just build up, well, you know, bring all the examples from this state, just similar incidences. And then people call and they say, well, I think this and that. And it's so they can understand that, you know, first of all, their opinions count,
mm-hmm.
but that it just everything they do really matters.
Okay. And if to help get people registered, you have translated the voter registration process. You've got papers that you copy,
yes.
and you put them into the hands of the pastors of these churches.
Yes.
So that if people want to be able to register to vote, they can go to their churches,
mm-hmm.
and they should be already equipped with the papers to be able to help
Absolutely.
Them register. And they have the voter registration process. That window is going to close here pretty soon.
October 8th is the last day to register, I believe, last day to register online,
online.
Soon. Yes.
And after that, if they want to register, they can actually go down to the elections office mm-hmm. and register in person up to a few days before the election.
Absolutely. About 3-4 days. And now, why in particular I began the method of issuing voter registration papers, the biggest problem is many do not have a computer. They, obviously, there's a lot of, you know, from a Christian viewpoint, there's a lot of sin, whether it be pornography, whatnot, and parents try to shield, you know, in this case in particular, pornography from their children, so they just refuse to have computers. That, obviously, you know, in the state of Washington, you could register online, but if you don't have a computer, you can't really access the registration papers and you can't register. You know, you could always go to the DMV. Mm-hmm. So I'm with the other, you know, method I'm implementing, and that was because a radio caller called in. She says, you know, I support you. I want more people registered. This is very important.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the online registration is very limited, especially for those over 50. They refuse to have a computer. Very often it's blue collar jobs, so you really don't need a computer at your house.
Yeah. For those that do have a computer, the Slavic North, yes. NW.com mm-hmm. is one site. For those that are English speaking, they can also go, at least for Clark County, they can go to clarkvotes.com,
mm-hmm.
and there's a link in there for people to register online as well.
Okay.
Otherwise, after that October 8th date, then they can go down to the elections office, and hopefully they will register, hopefully they will get involved, hopefully they'll understand the significance of their vote and the freedom that they have, that it's not rigged. It really does make a difference, especially at the local level, If they want to steer clear of the same kind of thing that brought down Greece and in Spain, any place where socialism is failing, they know what the failure is in the Soviet Union.
Absolutely. You know, it's, and one more thing about that, I mean, it really counts, but a lot of them complain. They say, well, look at this, look who controls, you know, look at the laws, you know, such as referendum 74. Look what they gave us. They gave us, you know, in this particular image, the referendum 74. We don't want this. We oppose this. We don't support, in this case, that kind of lifestyle. That's, you know, mm-hmm. And they complain, obviously. You know, they complain about the fact that, for example, in Oregon, at the age of 15, without the parental consent, a girl could be sterilized. They complain about this. But I say, well, you don't do anything. You don't stop this. You could change this. You really can. But you don't. So just don't complain. Vote. So, I don't want to hear you complaining. I want you voting.
So get up and do something about
Absolutely.
It. And they can.
Absolutely. And if they do, then they could. We could live better. We could have better mm-hmm. laws. You know.
That's right.
So
That's
just
right.
less, you know, I used to complain too. I was like, oh, those, you know, it's wrong. It's all wrong, all these laws. And then I started realizing, no, I could change those laws. I can make myself better. Why not just make myself better by being more active?
Yeah, yeah. It's such a basic fundamental to get here that this is a representative form of government. This mm-hmm. is a bottom-up form of government. Self-government only works when you have self-governing people. That means we all participate. We take up our diligent process of responsibility to get up and do something about it, get informed, and to vote and to support those candidates that are on the right side of the issues as we see them.
Absolutely. And I say, you know, look at who the activist is. I mean, you're upset, but those, they whatever you call them your enemies. They don't sleep day and night. They're actively working to make it harder for you.
Yeah. So, if you're not going to do something about it, not going to participate, then don't complain.
Absolutely.
But this is a government that is formed on the foundation of we the people.
Yes.
So it's up to we, the people, to participate
really
and vote in order to make it count. And it does count.
And that's what, I mean, you know, we have the federal government, then you have the state government, then you have just the local government. You know, you have mayor, you have president,
sure.
the governor, the mayors, and then you have even school districts, really. And they, you know, they by themselves are, you know, little governments. It's it's very essential, but that's what it comes down to. Every single, just this tiniest level, and we have control over that.
Right. At the local level, we are all big fish in a little pond, so we can make a big difference. And if you can vote at the local level, go ahead and check off those at the higher level, the state and the federal. Well, I'm glad you're participating, and hopefully we'll be hearing you on the radio at 10:10 a.m.
Absolutely.
And there are other hosts as well. There's a number of talk radio
yes.
hosts there. And the Russian community, the Russian-speaking community can engage and hopefully make progress to understand there is freedom.
Absolutely.
And you can make a difference, and hopefully they will. Great.
I think so. And, you know, we have 30 days left, and I will try my best. But progress is slow, but there is progress.
Steady.
And that is essential.
Okay. Well, very good. I think we'll wrap it up with that. Any last word that you want to be able to share with the community?
Get out and vote.
Okay,
If
all right.
you want to save and preserve your religious freedoms, get out and vote. We will not have this forever. We will not have it for a long time. And the one last thing I'll say, I love this example, this professor. I don't remember his name, but you know, it was a true story. He was teaching law students. He was teaching a political science class. And many of the students complained. I mean, most of them complained. Now, when election time came, after the elections, he asked the class, how many of you complainers voted? Only two of them voted. And he said, for that, because of what you did, well, he punished them. All right. Everybody who, no, he said, I will not hear a peep from you again. I will never hear a complaint from anybody who had not voted today. And, I mean, there was less complaining, obviously, which is better for the professor.
But hopefully next time they voted and they could speak up.
Absolutely.
Great. Okay. Well, with that, I think we need to wrap it up. Yeah. And hopefully this program we'll find a volunteer who can translate this into Russian.
Yes.
So that that community, a very important part of our citizenry here, can hear this in their own language and be encouraged by that.
Absolutely. All I'm saying is patience, and I believe we have found someone in that's very soon.
Great.
The Russian community will be active locally too, and they will get to hear on kuva.com Russian articles, Russian translations.
Yes.
And they do care. They do care about the I-5. I mean, they go to church or they work. They have to cross these bridges. I mean, there are
important issues. So the encouragement also to the Russian community is if you want to be able to hear these programs mm-hmm. in your language, volunteer. Contact us at kuv.com and give us a call here. Just simply go to our website or give us a call, and we will be happy to audition you so that you can participate and you can serve your community that way. With that, we'll wrap it up. Thank you very much. I appreciate it,
Vitaly. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mr. Medor, for bringing me on the show. It was a pleasure. It was an honor. Mm-hmm.